right. This is Secular Foxhole Podcast. And today our returning guest is Andy Clarkson. He is a researcher on the history of philosophical ideas and is the author of the book, The Impact of Aristotle Upon Christian, Islamic, and Jewish Cultures, and the associated YouTube series, video series, quote, The Six-Point Pattern of the Anti-Aristotelians. Andy is here to discuss another leading conservative who many objectivists associate with. And Andy's here to tell us why this is wrong. Go ahead, Andy.
Well, do you want to run by who first? Dennis
yeah.
First?
That could be
sure,
good,
okay. Thank you.
Maybe they should guess and have a revelation.
Sorry about that. Andy's here to discuss Dennis Prager. And Dennis Prager is a nationally syndicated talk show host, heard across the country on nearly 400 affiliates. He is the founder of Prager University, PragerU, the most viewed conservative video site in the world, with 1 billion views a year, more than half by people under the age of 35. And he's also a New York Times bestselling author of 9 books on subjects as varied as religion, happiness, morality, the left, Islamism, and America. As with Jordan Peterson, Dennis Prager has some good sounding on the surface stuff. Quote, goodness is about character, integrity, honesty, kindness, generosity, moral courage, and the like. More than anything else, it is about how we treat other people, unquote. And here's another quote. When emotions dominate, maturity and wisdom deteriorate. Here's one more. Whatever the left touches, the arts, the economy, healthcare, the soul, religion, it destroys or damages. So, Andy, what's going on with objectivists and Dennis Prager?
Well, let me start with a question to you guys first, but just simmer on this a bit, and maybe we can discuss it at the end if there's time. And the question is, why do some objectivists cling to conservatives, like we're going to talk about Prager today, and we've talked about Peterson, but not to liberals or those on the left? And it's obvious why there's no interest in the nihilist far left. That's pure destruction over there, and they should be morally condemned. So I see why objectivists don't, you know, go mm-hmm. for those guys and mm-hmm. promote them. But objectivists are pro-choice or pro-gay rights, pro-legalization of drug laws. Those are all liberal, quote unquote, you know, even in modern terms, modern stances. But for the most part, I see a significant number of objectivists leaning to conservative mystics such as Prager, and as we discussed in the previous episode, Jordan Peterson. So just give some thought on it as we go on, and maybe we'll discuss that at the end. I'll move forward with your first question, though. Okay. Which was what's going on with objectivists and Dennis Prager? What do I see? We'll talk about the why later. There are two things I see going on. One, as I mentioned in the Jordan Peterson episode, there's a tendency by some to cling to these conservatives who have some good sounding things. So we saw with Peterson in the previous episode, you went through, you know, a half dozen or a dozen good sounding things. We had
the cat.
Yes. And absolutely can't forget the cat. And we had some, you know, well-known authors who said some good things, and we found out who they were. I think there's clinging to these good-sounding things. And then, two, what's going on is we saw a major objectivist organization recently partnered with Prager's organization, known as PragerU, as you mentioned, to run a short video on Ayn Rand. And that video was very good, and it received millions of views. But I think that partnership is wrong. And if you go back to, I'm gonna go back to Ayn Rand and Leonard Peikoff a bunch of times during this conversation, because I think it's a good reminder of not just, these aren't Andy's views on objectivism, these are Ayn Rand's, it's her philosophy, and also Peikoff, who was the best exponent of her ideas. So if you go back to the 1964 Playboy interview, I think you guys have probably seen that.
Oh, certainly.
Yep. And we know that Prager is a religious person. We'll get to see some more evidence of that here in the middle. But just send the tone a little bit about religion. Playboy asked Ayn Rand, question, has no religion in your estimation ever offered anything of constructive value to human life? And here's Rand's quote, qua religion, meaning as religion, no. in the sense of blind belief, beliefs unsupported by or contrary to the facts of reality and the conclusions of reason. Faith, as such, is extremely detrimental to human life. It is the negation of reason. But you must remember that religion is an early form of philosophy, that the first attempts to explain the universe, to give a coherent frame of reference to a man's life and a code of values, were made by religion before men graduated or developed enough to have a philosophy. And she continues, this is Rand, quote, continuing, and as philosophies, some religions have some very valuable moral points. They may have a good influence or proper principles to inculcate, but in a very contradictory context, not a very, how should I say it, dangerous or malevolent base on the ground of faith, unquote. So that's from the Playboy interview from 1964. Dr. Leonard Peikoff, we mentioned him in the Peterson episode a while back. He has some thoughts on this as well. And let's take a step back and look at the big picture. I referred to last show about Peterson and to Peikoff's article on fact and value. And I think you guys linked to that previously, if you can link to it again, to have it in the show notes. I'll share only a small piece here, but I encourage all listeners to absorb it. I'm going to pluck from it in context for the purposes of brevity the key points that Dr. Peikoff makes out of a couple selected paragraphs, and which are the key points, I think, of today's episode. Here's the first quote. There are about six of them, very short. First one, a single fundamental issue. In the human realm, one must distinguish the rational from the irrational, the thinkers from the evaders. That's one quote. A second quote, whether a man in principle is committed to reality or to escaping from it and fighting it. Third, quote three, in the one case, he is an ally and potential benefactor of the living. In the other, an enemy and potential destroyer. When he's talking about people of reason versus those of faith. Mm-hmm. Next quote, first deal with, support and or reward the good. And second, boycott, condemn and or punish the evil. Second to last quote, the principle of not granting to evil one's moral sanction. And then finally, through the scrupulous justice of the better man, the good, that is the man of the mind, wins out. The good wins out. There is virtually no form of ignorance or natural disaster that men cannot successfully combat. So that's available on his Dr. Peikoff's website. So this all ties back to some very fundamental aspects of objectivism. What is the good? It's the rational. What is evil? It's the irrational. Very, very clear. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we're doing here on today's episode, making an evaluation of the irrational, that is of mysticism, that is of faith, as Ayn Rand described, and as Dr. Peikoff just described. We're applying justice to one Dennis Prager. I think we need to continue here about defining the playing field. Again, reason versus mysticism. That's the essential discussion point and what's at stake here. The reason versus mysticism, the rational versus the irrational. As with Jordan Peterson, we have to look deeper. Today's conversation is about the primacy of epistemology over ethics and politics. And for those who aren't familiar, I know you guys obviously are, epistemology is the science of how we know. We will look at reason versus mysticism. What is reason? What is mysticism? How are they different? They're both claims on how to gain knowledge. Ethics is the field of how we should act based upon what we know, based upon our epistemology. And then we will go ahead and we will just condemn the evil of Dennis Prager. We will not grant him moral sanction. And let's start with Ayn Rand. More quotes here. Ayn Rand stated clearly, quote, I am not primarily an advocate of capitalism, but of egoism. So there's the politics and then the ethics. I am not primarily an advocate of egoism, but of reason. There's the epistemology. If one recognizes the supremacy of reason and applies it consistently, all the rest follows. She continues, this, the supremacy of reason, was, is, and will be the primary concern of my work and the essence of objectivism. Reason in epistemology leads to egoism in ethics, which leads to capitalism in politics. Please note that Ms. Rand did not say, please lump me with any mystic who pokes at the leftists, right?
Right.
Just because somebody who says some things like Peterson was against the communists doesn't mean we need to lump with them. But the recent trend of some objectivists is to cling desperately to anyone of prominence who criticizes the politics of the left, and that they do that without looking to the metaphysical and epistemological roots to discover that these people are anti-reason. Jordan Peterson's an example, Dennis Prager is another. And on the political level, I would add Donald Trump, who did say some good things, not a lot, but some good things that you could say, okay, maybe I agree with that, but that's no reason to cling to him. So I'm providing evidence for my point from a Fox Business News video with Dennis Prager. There's a link in the show notes. Hopefully you guys can put that in there. It's very short. While there are many instances of Prager correctly pointing out the irrationality of the left, just as you provided there in the beginning, Blair, Note how Dennis Prager, in this four-minute video below, tries to sound rational by attempting to tie reason and mysticism together. That is impossible. Prager's fundamental irrationality is more important than whatever contradictory, good-sounding criticisms he may have of the nihilist left. Note Ms. Rand's hierarchy again, I just mentioned. Epistemology leads to ethics, which leads to politics. You got to get the epistemology and the metaphysics along with the epistemology. Metaphysics, of course, is your view of the universe. Is it controlled by some consciousness like God? Or is the universe what it is? Existence exists, and it's our consciousness needs to figure out what is the universe. So let's keep going on reason and mysticism. Ayn Rand provides definitions for both, and note the fundamental difference between the two. So here's Ayn Rand on reason. Reason is the faculty that identifies and integrates the material provided by man's senses. Reason integrates man's perceptions by means of forming abstractions or conceptions, thus raising man's knowledge from the perceptual level meaning from the senses, which he shares with animals, to the conceptual level. Okay, so we have reason based in concepts, and that's based on our senses. Now let's look to mysticism. What did Ayn Rand have to say about mysticism? What is mysticism? Mysticism is the acceptance of allegations without evidence or proof, either apart or against the evidence of one's senses and one's reason. Mysticism is the claim to some non-sensory, non-rational, non-definable, non-identifiable means of knowledge, such as instinct, intuition, revelation, or any form of just knowing. Reason is the perception of reality. So we have reason, which is pro-senses, your ability to see, to hear, to smell, and mysticism, the opposite, is anti-evidence, anti-conceptual faculty, anti-senses. So now we have a means of comparing reason versus mysticism with these two excerpts from Ayn Rand. Reason is based on our senses. Mysticism is some non-sensory alleged claim to knowledge. What do we do with that? What do you do when you come across someone who espouses mysticism? Well, let's look at the mystical epistemology of Dennis Prager. Here are some excerpts from the four-minute video I just mentioned, plus my comments on each. His epistemological base is mysticism. It's not sense-based. It's completely inconsistent with reason, egoism, and capitalism. Here's the first example. Prager states that the founders of America considered the Bible as the greatest work ever. Now, my comment here, this ignores the fundamental Greek-Roman foundations of America from Aristotle, Cicero, and others. And it also ignores the Aristotelian Enlightenment thinker John Locke, who came up with life, liberty, and property, which became the Jeffersonian life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Individual happiness being an Aristotelian primary. I cover this in my book. Also, Locke's focus upon reason and individual rights. Second point about Prager. He says that the book of Exodus in the Old Testament is the source of wisdom in America. Again, what of the Aristotelian Renaissance and Enlightenment? Prager evades the Aristotelian impact on the growth of science, medicine, technology, the arts, exploration, and human flourishing since Aristotelian Renaissance. Prager claims the Bible is divinely, that is, mystically created. There, he says, is a divine author in his view. This is a perfect example of what Ayn Rand described, the supernatural aspect of mysticism. So there's this great consciousness in his view, these are my words, in his, that rules the universe. So consciousness rules of existence in the Prager view of the universe and the world, where from an objectivist point of view, we just say existence exists. Whatever exists in the universe, the known, the unknown, what's visible to us and knowable to us now, and what is not visible and not known to us, whatever exists is out there. Billions of stars and planets and maybe other life out there, it just exists. And it's up to our consciousness, our senses, and our faculty of reason to understand what it is. So does that make sense, that fundamental difference between the supernatural view of the universe and the objectivist view? Any questions on that, fellas?
It is. But how could he, if you watch that video, he tries to, as I said, the Exodus, to prove it in a rational way that the Bible is. He's going through the Ten Commandments and others. Do you have any comments or thoughts on that?
We'll get into that. I just want to get a couple more points here, Prager. One is that he says that this is just stunning to me, that Western civilization will fail without religion, that civilization cannot survive without the transcendent truth, that is, you know, above reality, supernatural truth of Judeo-Christian tradition. Now, my take is this, of course, ignores that humankind did have the transcendent truth as its basis for 1,000 years, known as the Christian Dark Ages. Thank you, Plato. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you, St. Augustine and others. The Dark Ages were based on the ideals set forth in Jesus's Sermon on the Mount and promoted to a major degree by St. Augustine, who called the Sermon on the Mount the Constitution of the City of God. And from there, you know, we saw the fall of Rome within a few decades of Augustine and 1,000 years of poverty, stagnation, murder under the rule of the Christian Church in the Dark Ages. Prager also ignores the fact that Western civilization is based upon Aristotelian reason, as evidenced by, again, the Renaissance and the Enlightenment. He leaves out the Aristotelian-based Jewish Enlightenment, known as the Haskalah, which was in the 18th and 19th centuries, which led to the Jewish Reform Movement and the rise of Jews in science, technology, business, medicine, and so on.
Would Prager label himself as that he adhered to the Jewish religion, so to speak? But when you look at Wikipedia, he converted from one religion to another after some crisis, I think.
Okay. Yeah, I think he is his origins in the Jewish religion. That's my understanding. I don't know fundamentally what he is now. Did they say the article what he is? Is he a Christian now, or is he still Jewish, or what is he?
I think he's still Jewish. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
You include the Wikipedia also. People could check it.
Yeah, that'll be good. But I think it's more fundamental whether he's, you know, a devout Christian or devout Jewish, devout Jew. We see his fundamental mystical ideas. So he attributes the end of slavery to the Bible. We know that slavery ended due to the recognition over time of individual rights of all humans, regardless of ancestry and biology. And individual rights is a Lockean enlightenment, and that is a reason-based idea. You know, slavery went on for thousands and thousands of years, and it exists to this day. It was in the United States of America and in England where it was put to an end because of these Enlightenment ideas. And
correct. Yes, correct.
Disgusted. So, you know, to say that the Bible is the cause of the end of slavery is bizarre. So what we have from Prager, these bullets I've just gone over with you, are a series of arbitrary assertions that is not based on evidence, and it's a complete evasion of history. In particular, that the Dark Ages were, you know, he evades that they were caused by religion and the Renaissance and the Enlightenment. You know, those things, the Renaissance and Enlightenment, were made possible by the slow, eventual reemergence of Aristotelian reason. Let's talk about Judeo-Christian tradition. This kind of ties into your question, Martin. He brings up the Judeo-Christian tradition, and that's the cornerstone of his set of ideas. This is how I see the Judeo-Christian tradition. It is Jesus Christ in the Sermon on the Mount saying, quote, "Therefore take no thought, saying, what shall we eat? What shall we drink? Or wherewithal shall we be clothed? For your heavenly Father knoweth that you have need of all these things." The translation of that, you don't have to think. You don't have to act. God will take care of you. This is the philosophy of the irrational, of passivity in mind and body, and it is anti-reason and thus anti-human. Again, going back to this view of this great consciousness ruling the universe, as opposed to consciousness being the means of human understanding of the universe. Here's another bullet, another point about the Judeo-Christian tradition. It is St. Augustine's view. And this is as noted by Wilhelm Windelbaum, the author of A History of Philosophy. Quote, "The relation of the human mind to this truth, which is metaphysically its superior," okay, "and that can in the main be only a passive one. The knowledge of the intelligible world is for Augustine also essentially illumination, revelation." So this is what this is saying is Augustine doesn't even want you to seek out help or guidance from God. You must be a passive receptor. That's obviously not reason. It's not rational. And, you know, it's one thing, you know, religious people pray. Well, you know, there's something to that, not in reality, but at least you're asking for something for yourself or someone you care for. If you have, you know somebody who's of value to you and they're sick, you pray to God. Well, that's taking action, not in reality, but at least it's as opposed to the Augustinian view, you're wishing something well upon someone you love and you think you're doing something. You're really not. But Augustine's view is, no, you shouldn't even be asking God for things. You just sit there and wait for God, this great consciousness which rules the universe, to send you messages. So that's part of the Judeo-Christian tradition, right? We have Jesus and St. Augustine, big players in that field, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then we've got Tertullian. And this is a quote as noted by Dr. Peikoff. Tertullian, an early Christian thinker, saying that religion by its nature requires the subversion of reason, the belief in the irrational, because it is irrational. He had delivered a ringing, Tertullian had delivered a ringing anti-reason manifesto declaring in regard to the dogma of God's self-sacrifice on the cross, it is believable because it is absurd. It is certain because it is impossible. How's that, fellas?
I think that's a contradiction.
Yeah. Yes. And Tertullian is not, you know, not known by most people. But he is a, you know, 2,000 years ago, a major figure in formulation of Christian ideas. He's a player.
Mm-hmm.
So now we understand what Prager is referring to when he bases his whole philosophy upon the Judeo-Christian tradition. It is anti-reason. It is irrational. It is evil. So let's conclude with, now compare the ideas of the Judeo-Christian tradition to Ayn Rand's quote at the beginning that I provided. Reason in epistemology leads to egoism in ethics, which leads to capitalism in politics. I would add to that, mysticism in epistemology results in misery and death in ethics and collectivism in politics. Dennis Prager's words are the work of an enemy. In Dr. Peikoff's words, boycott, condemn, and do not provide moral sanction to the enemy. The biggest fallout from aligning with the mystics, beyond the obvious personal negative consequences to oneself, such as Prager and Peterson, is that the most rational individuals that we are trying to attract to objectivism will be turned off mistakenly by these associations. I know I would have been. Milton Friedman turned me off years ago by attributing the freedom of individuals to trade with each other, to be free to choose. He aligned that with the Judeo-Christian tradition. There is historical precedent for this. Galileo and Newton mistakenly rejected Aristotle, even though they used his epistemological methods for the great scientific discoveries, because we know that Aristotle was really the first great scientist, even though many of his things turned out to be wrong. His methods were correct on observation and seeing things from reality. Both Galileo and Newton rejected him because the church dogmatized his works. They, you know, the church basically said, you have to believe what Aristotle said, everything. They made a god out of Aristotle, which is a mistake. They had a mystic approach to Aristotle as opposed to a reason-based approach. A reason-based approach to Aristotle would be, yes, use reason to find out whether Aristotle was right or not. In areas where he was wrong, okay, let's prove that. And if he was wrong, he was wrong. There's nothing wrong with that. My point is, let's not have this happen to Ayn Rand in objectivism, what happened to Aristotle. Why would any rational person, objectivist or otherwise, give Prager a moment's notice? That is other than to follow Peikoff's recommendation to boycott and condemn and not provide moral sanction. Be a radical for reason. Denounce the mysticism of Dennis Prager. Support reason on principle. And that's what I've got on Prager, fellas. I do want to get back to, if you think we have time, about my question to you guys. Why do objectivists, why, in your opinion, and you may come from different backgrounds, that'd be interesting to hear if you wanted to divulge that, but why do objectivists lean towards conservatives but not towards liberals? And again, the far left should be condemned as immoral, just as Prager should be as a mystic. And those are the far left are mystics of muscle in Ayn Rand's terms, and Prager and Peterson are mystics of spirit in Ayn Rand's terms. But do you guys see the same thing? And what are your thoughts about this clinging to conservative?
Could it be, Andy, that at least in America, that you have plenty of conservatives, and maybe they talk about their religion also, that they are linked to market economy and free markets and capitalism. At least they say that as lip service. So that could be one thing. Because I believe in this classical liberalism. And of course, sometimes you have a hard time to translate that in Europe and America, because liberalism has been, so labeled that it's left. But that's not, shouldn't be the case, I think. So I think that could be the thing. For me, I wonder, when I watched the video that you said is good, and I think that too, why I wonder how could he? He's very polite and very polished and very intellectual one way.
Yeah.
But I wonder how could he be so popular by the youth? So I could understand some of the reasoning if you could reach somebody. For example, when you were turned on off by Milton Friedman, I had the same experience in a way. Not that he related to, you the Christian. But I got turned off by others that were so-called for free market, but when they turned out to be anarchist or, you know, against military or all kind of thing. So then I searched further and found an integrated system of thought and objectivism.
So, yep, me too.
So that's my journey. And if that video and others could turn somebody, youth that see, look up to Prager, how they now could do that, if they are like, you know, youth and so on. Because that's what I thought when I saw some Prager University. It's not a real university. It's like a video library, right?
Yeah.
But I saw that on like Snapchat or others, and it was very, you know, Trump-like and very pop, you know, popular or pop culture thing. And, you know, kids saying against things against leftists and so on. And I thought, okay, what's the point? I understand. But so that's my first... when I heard about Prager, I thought, is that the same thing as the, you know, when we reach out to the younger kids? And then I saw him discussing. So I will include that in the show notes. That's my thought when I search on Wikipedia. My litmus test, if you are against abortion and if you are against homosexuality, for example, as we talked about. And when I dig out that on Prager, he is, if we believe it, that when we search for pro-choice, but he did a video there that he talked about the moral aspects of abortion. And when you listen to that, he's doing a so-called good case for it. He knows how to talk. But I get chills when I watch that.
Yeah.
And the other thing is also what in back in the history when he testified against homosexuality and so on as not a so-called... a natural thing and so on. So he has that in the closet. But my question again, how could he build up this huge following? That's my question.
So. Yeah. I don't know. But I have some thoughts, but Blair, do you have anything you want to share?
Well, I want to, let me say, before I answer your question, I want to point out what you said with Jesus and the Sermon on the Mount, your translation, you don't have to think, you don't have to act, God will take care of you. Immediately came to mind was during this COVID episode, it may have started with Trump or not, but certainly Biden continued it. Oh, listen, you're unemployment. We'll give you $600 more a week. So you don't worry. You know, it's the same thing. You know, don't think, don't worry. We'll take care of you. It's the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, we, you know, if you look at Marxism, it's a secular version of the Sermon on the Mount.
That's exactly it, yeah.
And, you know, and so the left prides themselves on not believing in God and miracles and walking on water. And, you know, we're for science, the left says. But they follow the same ethical and political consequences.
The state
of the
is
Sermon
creating
on the Mount.
Miracles, you know. They create jobs and the politicians are creating jobs. And
It's still mysticism. It's just a variant of mysticism.
I don't know if it was Miss Rand or someone. They summarized Marxism by all he did was substitute the word state for the word God. Everything else is, you know, Judeo-Christian or Christian ethics.
Yeah.
He just made that one substitution.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I cover both the Sermon on the Mount and the Communist Manifesto in my book. The idea... from a mental passivity point of view is there. Because if you look in the Sermon on the Mount, it's all this stuff about don't think about this, don't worry about that, turn the other cheek. Somebody owes you money, don't worry about it. If, you know, all this other passive stuff. And then it's interesting in Marx, he talks about the poor passive worker, right? The worker who's just, you know, in this factory and he's going nowhere. And, you know, he's describing all this during the Industrial Revolution, which is the greatest time period in the history of man, of lifting the average worker out of poverty and his children with opportunities and generations of opportunities to get out of poverty and improve their lives. He's looking, as Marx is saying, oh, look at the poor passive worker. He has no choice. His implication is he has no individual consciousness to make decisions on his own. He's a slave.
He's a wage slave.
He's stuck there. But what will save him? The social consciousness will save him. So some other greater consciousness. So in Christianity, it's okay to be passive. Be passive. The mystical revelatory consciousness will take care of you, okay? In Marx, yes, it's passive. There's nothing you can do. You're a slave. But the social consciousness, the workers of the world will unite in this great one collectivist social consciousness, and we will not deliver food by miracles through God. We will deliver miracles through destruction. And if you read the Communist Manifesto, there is a call for force and destruction and seizing of property all through the damn manifesto. It is in black and white. You can't deny it. It's not there implicitly. It's not nuanced. It is there in black and white. So we will provide for you. You will be provided for, O passive one, to the miracle of the social consciousness. It's kind of close to what you say, that it's not God receiving it, providing to you. It's other social consciousness through the force of government and the mob will provide for you. So, yeah, in that aspect, you're right, Blair. Yep.
Yeah, so to answer your question, at least in my – I'll speak for myself. I rejected religion at an early age. I think it was like 9.
Wow.
But unfortunately, I still had to go every Sunday, or most every Sunday, because you know I couldn't stay home by myself. You know, while my older brother and parents went to church. But maybe I'm not going to say most objectivists. I certainly was looking for something. It's funny. I think when I went to university and I took an intro to philosophy, I instantly disliked Plato. Yet I can't recall them. I can't even recall them mentioning Aristotle in this course.
Yeah, probably not.
And so I went. So there goes years of still wandering around looking for something. And then, as I said, I guess in my last episode or one of the previous episodes, a dear friend of mine said, "Here, why don't you read this?" And it was The Fountainhead by Ayn Rand.
Yeah,
and talk about throwing a lifeline to a drowning man.
We talked about they see maybe it's a trend and popularity, like Jordan Peterson, that's his popular guy. And because I haven't heard about Prager until I saw the short videos and watched a bit, so I'm amazed that he's so so popular. But we also include the quotes there. Top 25 quotes by Dennis Prager, and many of them are, as we said, if you had that, you did a test with us the other time, we would probably say okay for that. But mix and match. But still,
yeah, I think he's doing the same thing
in the choice, that you could do a choice. And I, if it's a potential there that young intellectuals that are not, they are not cornered in yet, and if I hear about Rand, they could make a decision to say that, okay, this conservative road is going nowhere.
Yeah, I think.
But you see the power, what he has. He has, a huge outreach and a whole. I think it's pretty small organization, but it's really, lots of downloads and lots of things going on there. So,
I think it's a couple things. You know, the religion gets downplayed. We have the video from him on Fox Business. That's a 4-minute video. There are these 25 quotes, and, most of us, many of us would agree with some of those quotes on the surface, just like with Peterson's, like, okay, these are okay. And I think a lot of objectivists, though I do know objectivists who come from, the Democratic side, their families, or the liberal or left side, I think most objectivists, I could be wrong here, and if somebody has some stats to oppose this, that's fine. But a lot of objectivists come from conservative backgrounds.
Yeah, I think that's true too.
And they see Ayn Rand's politics, and they like the politics. And I went to the politics first. Most people do. So I did dive in pretty quickly to the deeper stuff. But there's political things that Peterson says that sound good. There are some things that Prager sounds good. And I think there's sort of like, oh, there's somebody else on our side, right? And our side meaning from a political perspective. Oh, and we're getting beat up. We're getting trounced by the left. And, they're stealing elections and they're doing all these things. And the left is on the march. And at least we have these guys on our side. And politically, maybe a little bit they are on some isolated issues, but they're not on our side. And I think people dismiss the religious part. Religion's not a big part of their lives. And they kind of dismiss it like, oh, it's not a big deal for most people. It's the politics is important, is their view. But again, it's a very dangerous base, as Ayn Rand said. Faith is a very dangerous base. And Prager and Peterson are putting faith out there as their metaphysics and epistemology. And to align us with those mystics is a real, real mistake.
What I would encourage objectivists to listen to this podcast, or objectivists in general, take time to imbibe with objectivism, and you have a decent grasp, if not a great grasp of it. Use your mind to study the Bible, and you will see, as I have, I'll speak for myself, I can't speak for anyone else, but for me, the Bible is the blueprint for authoritarianism.
Yes.
Once you have this Aristotelian perspective on life, if you go to that book, you'll understand, oh my gosh, you know, this is, how could this have lasted 2,000 years and still with us?
Yeah, yeah. And with that, just read the Sermon on the Mount. You don't have to read the whole Bible. Read the whole Bible if you want. Consistency you're talking about is there. But just go online and look up King James Version of the Sermon on the Mount and take it at face value. Mm-hmm. I'm talking to people who say about the Sermon on the Mount, oh, no, Jesus is just saying, don't get obsessed with fancy clothes and fancy cars and go overboard and be narcissistic and showy. No, that's not what he's saying. Mm-hmm. He's saying, don't think about these things, about what you're going to eat, you're going to drink, the clothes you're going to wear, your money, your life. God's going to take care of you. So to take it, and Ayn Rand talked about this, about these evil philosophers and these people who carry these mystical ideas through the centuries. Take them at face value. Do not come up with excuses for them. Don't come up with, oh, what he's really saying here is good. No. And you got a key point here. If you have a reason-based Aristotelian point of view, you understand what reason is, and you have the proper view of the universe, then you can look at what these people say objectively. And it is anti-reason, it is sacrificial, and it is collectivistic. And to your point, Blair, it is calling for, you know, dictatorship eventually.
So Andy, when I have some couple ending points here about the video, and maybe that will be for another round also, a follow-up. At the end there, talking about for as a Copperpot objectivist, the interviewer at the show, he asked him to sign this book, and again the name there, the Rational Bible Exodus.
Yes.
So now I will have another segment. Please sign this book, and hands his pen. But then Prager saying, taking out, no, I will do it with my own fountain pen.
Yes.
That I like with it, because there you have, he has something that he cherishes, a material thing. And he wants to sign it. And he's often well-dressed. And he was sitting in his, you know, Chesterfield sofa there. And a nice library. And a nice desk. So you wonder about that. So that's a comment on
yeah, yeah. Well, I think he comes, to your point, he said, you know, he's very well-spoken. He comes across as very polite, as very rational. Somebody listen to him. He's not a Bible thumping, Jesus is going to save you kind of guy. He comes across as rational and says some good things, and that's probably a part of his appeal. He is very firm with his words. He's very confident, and he comes across as a kind of a prosperous American businessman. A nice suit. Here's my pen. Yeah. You know, I'm a nice guy.
Yeah.
Hey, how can you not like him, right?
Yeah. It's another type of marshmallow. So then I would say as an ending, but maybe could be a follow-up, could include that also in the show notes, because we have talked about liberalism there, and the so-called last liberal, but I don't know if he labeled himself that now, but Rubin Report.
Oh, yeah.
He has been, you know, on a tour with Jordan Peterson, and he interviewed Dennis Prager about homosexuality, on censorship and others. You know, it have been cases about baking cakes and whatnot. and I haven't watched it, but we could include that. But maybe that could be for something for the future, that you could check up on Ruben report and how is he doing right now, under influence, so to speak. Do you see my drift here? Because
yeah,
I really, when I watched him the first time, I said, wow, this guy is I mean, he's really the last liberal here. But what have happened since that?
Yeah, my understanding is that he's become more religious. He's gone from being pretty far left to the last couple of years fairly reasonable, rational, not objectivist, but, you know, a guy who was searching for ideas. And I think I've heard that he's moved over to the being a mystic of muscle to now a mystic of spirit with a rational stop in between. So sorry to hear that, because I really like Dave's show. I haven't listened to it a long time and frankly not interested anymore in him.
Yeah, I think he the way he put it was he doesn't believe that you can do it all with reason. There has to be something, and he couldn't define it, of course.
Of course. Yeah, of course he couldn't. He could.
Because you can't, because it doesn't exist. But let me ask you this, though. Let's take this down again to a personal level, Andy. And Martin, you can toss your two cents in as well. I'm an average middle-class guy, married, homeowner. I live in a great neighborhood. I have great neighbors. We have great discussions sometimes. But clearly, I'm the only objectivist in probably
in the neighborhood. Oh, that's shocking.
Yeah. And you know, I pick my battles, so to speak.
Yeah.
If there's a point to be made, I try to make it as gentlemanly and as clearly as I can, without offending, you know, my guests or being a guest in their home. I certainly don't want to offend them. But so, how does if we can't brook any cooperation with religious people, how can we reconcile just being decent neighbors? Does that make any sense?
Yeah. I mean, I think most Americans, you know, and in my book, I'm not just plugging the book here, but there's some references there. There are, I think, three types of, or a couple types of Christians. One is, I mentioned Augustine before, and there's the deeply fundamentalist, you know, I'm waiting for a word from God. Everything is in God's plan. God is in my hands, right? There's that type of Christian.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then there's more of, let's say, the John Locke type of Christian. You know, John Locke was part of the Enlightenment, father of the Enlightenment, along with Shaftesbury and others in England. And yes, they believed in God, but they put reason first. And that's why they were able to come up to discuss things like reason and individual rights. I put most Americans more in the Locke camp than I do the Augustine camp. Now, clearly, there's some religious fundamentalists out there who are, you know, leaning the Augustine way. But I think most Americans are, because of the Enlightenment, and maybe to some degree Ayn Rand, are rational. You know, you say you live in a nice neighborhood with nice neighbors. Well, I'm assuming they all have jobs. They're fairly rational. They're productive people. They're, for the most part, honest, and they probably just carry some bad premises, which they don't even understand, which they got from their mother and grandmother and grandfather and grandfather, and just carry down. And just like you and me, went to church every Sunday, and that's all they know. But they also know to work hard and make money and raise good kids and be educated. So I think it's a case of mixed premises. But if you go against some of these people's mixed premises, It's a little dangerous. You got, I mean, you can lose friendships that way. I went to an event Tuesday night. It was just a couple nights ago. And it's an organization I'm involved with peripherally. But it's a great bunch of guys. And I like getting together with them and talking about sports and just regular stuff. But, you know, conversation turns to politics inevitably. And I just listened to a conversation. And I didn't say anything because I didn't want to blow up the party.
Well, right, but sure.
There were two guys talking, and these guys were very liberal leftist Democrats involved in politics. And it's interesting psychologically to see how they handle this. They were talking about Biden, and that, you know, they were saying, oh, we, meaning the left, is going to get destroyed in the upcoming elections. But this is what Biden's got to do. And I thought it was very fascinating to listen to these average guys with jobs who, you know, some of them have their own businesses. But there were a couple things they said that struck me. He said, Biden's got to go LBJ on Joe Manchin. You know, Manchin's the guy who's slowing down the $6 trillion budget and some of these crazy leftist ideas. And what he meant by go LBJ on him meant LBJ was known for physically grabbing senators in the cloakroom of the Senate and threatening their careers, physically threatening them. And you better vote for this, pal, right? And I thought, okay, that's what they want Biden to do. And then the other thing was they said, Biden's just got to do this so we can raise the money to give it to where it's needed. And I thought that was fascinating language. That one, this is not raising money. Raising money is you and I working for a volunteer organization, going out and asking people and trying to demonstrate to them voluntarily to donate money. This $6 trillion infrastructure budget is not raising money. It is looting money. So it was interesting that there was this evasion, or maybe in the kinder, gentler Biden way versus Trump way, we're going to use the kinder, gentler fascism than Trumpian fascism. We're going to use kinder language. We're not going to raise taxes. We're just going to raise funds for things for people who need stuff, which is pure Marx, from those, you know, from each according to his ability, to each according to his need. So I thought in that two sentences was a fascinating opportunity for philosophical detection of the kind of guys you're talking about in your neighborhood, you know, neighborhood guys and who have jobs, but have these deep, deep, deep premises, which are just horrible.
And I see what you mean. And it's sometimes it's hard for me to keep my
tongue. It is. It's hard. Yeah. And for the most part, in that case, I just kept my mouth shut and I wasn't going to get into an argument. It wasn't a time or place. It was a cookout. People were drinking beer, cooking hamburgers and hot dogs and having a good time. And I was not going to go, you know, all in. Though I did got an opportunity to talk my book a little bit and reason to one of the guys beforehand, because one of the guys called me Aristotle because he picked up on stuff on Facebook and he wasn't an objectivist. And why'd he call you Aristotle? I went into all that. But I wasn't going to go into that. And you know, the thing is, it's just you're not going to get anywhere with it. And I was having too much fun hanging out, talking sports and eating hot hamburgers.
That's right. That's right. So there's a time and place for it. Yeah.
Yeah. And Blair, yeah. And that's my rap for that. You could always refer them to this podcast and you could listen and then you could have a discussion. You could have a discourse. You could even have a debate. And as long as you have freedom of choice and freedom of expression and freedom of speech, we could convince and convert, so to speak, thinking individuals. So that,
true enough.
I think it's what we are doing right now here. So
yeah, absolutely.
Check your premises, listen to us, make up your mind. You are welcome to come with constructive criticism and make your point or start your own podcast or whatnot.
Exactly.
True enough. Yep. All right. Well, I guess, Andy, you're all set. You don't have anything else to add?
No, I'm good if you guys are good. Once again, thanks for having me, fellas. I really appreciate the opportunity. I love the discussion and the questions, and it's been my pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, you're welcome. Andy. We thank Andy Clarkson for appearing on our show again and for manning the foxhole with us. Thanks, Andy.
Take care, guys.
Take care. Thanks.